Welcome to Ready, Set, Practice, Insight for New PAs, the podcast that helps you bridge the gap between PA school and clinical practice. I'm Dr. Jennifer Orozco-Cole, the Chief Medical Officer at the American Academy of Physician Associates. And today we are tackling an essential topic for every new PA. How does your work get reimbursed? You know how to care for patients, but understanding the financial side of PA practice, billing, documentation, and payer enrollment is just as important. Reimbursement affects not only your paycheck, but also how your role is valued within the healthcare system. And to help us break it all down, we are joined by my friend and colleague, Dr. Sandra De Palma, the Vice President of Reimbursement and Professional Practice at the American Academy of Physician Associates. Dr. De Palma is an expert in healthcare policy, reimbursement, and PA practice, and has been a PA, healthcare leader, and professional advocate at the national and state levels for over 20 years. Dr. De Palma, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, why don't you start? Could you start a little bit by introducing yourself and maybe sharing some of your early career experiences as a PA?
I'd be happy to. So in my role as Vice President, Reimbursement and Professional Practice, I get to advocate for the full utilization and being able to practice for you as a PA to the top of your license. If you told me I was going to be doing this when I started my career, I probably would have laughed at you. I thought I was going to be in clinical practice, but my first two jobs, I was the first PA that they had ever employed. And so they didn't know a lot about billing and reimbursement for PA services. And I often had to figure that out myself and read Medicare policy. So that's what started it. And then I've always first and foremost thought of myself as a patient advocate. And being an advocate for the profession is actually being a patient advocate because you're removing barriers to patients who are having problems getting access to care when PAs don't have full utilization of the scope of their training and license.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you and I have practiced almost in the same time frame and experienced many of the different aspects of healthcare. And this is kind of the one that people don't like to they don't like to talk about, but it's important, right? So you know, I used to share as a leader in my healthcare system, you know, we want to take care of patients, but we also need to keep the lights on so you can do that. So tell me, you know, when was it that did you learn about the importance of billing and reimbursement and documentation and why that's so critical?
Well, it's part of our professional competency that we need to maintain. And that was instilled in me as a PA student, that really we are as equally responsible for this type of information as we are for clinical information. Also, as you mentioned, it is a necessity to get paid and reimbursed for your services so that you can continue to provide services for more patients, especially for underserved and underprivileged patients. So it's an equal component of your practice as much as your clinical practices.
Yeah. When I talk to students and then when I also talk to PAs, we often say, if you didn't write it, you didn't do it. It's EHR now, right? So if I didn't type it, maybe I didn't do it. But how has this sort of influenced the way that you document? I mean, you know, we struggle between the amount that we document and what's required for billing and reimbursement and what's required for compliance. So tell me a little bit about that phrase and why it's important as a clinician.
That's a great question. I think we've all heard the adage, if you didn't document it, it didn't happen. As you said, now it's if you didn't type it or you didn't scribe it or AI it, it didn't happen. But if there's no record of it, it can't be considered done. And if it's not considered done, it can't be billed for. So documentation is very important for a number of reasons. It's our medical legal documentation. It's how we communicate our thoughts and our plan of care with other practitioners. It's how we document information about medical conditions, comorbidities, the diagnostics we've reviewed. And so you want to make sure that you document everything that's appropriate so that people know how you came to the decision that you made, or maybe the decision that you did not make, because medical decision-making is really a large component of the determination for billing.
Yeah. So tell me, so true. How can, there's a lot of challenges with billing and coding, right? And, we all just want to take care of patients. And so, but it's essential that we do this. So, what are some of the biggest challenges that maybe you faced when learning to bill and code? And then, what did you do to sort of inform yourself and figure out the flow to help you move efficiently in a clinic or in the hospital setting?
And this is a difficult topic and a difficult area to excel in, but you can do it as a PA. In a clinical practice, there can be confusion about billing rules, and billing policies change. Some of these billing rules change on an annual basis. People can also be misinformed and have misunderstandings about these policies. So you might hear things that don't sound appropriate or correct. And you just need to question those. That's how I got my knowledge and how I got my start in advocacy, is questioning when something doesn't sound right. Ask for information in writing. Know what the rules are and keep up to date with them. Also, AAPA is a great resource for that. We update all of our resources annually, but really making sure that you're getting your information from accurate sources, because it's ultimately your responsibility when you are providing services and when services are being billed for them.
Yeah, it's so true. And I'm, the resources I know that AAPA has, I used to use it. It's a guidebook, right? And it's well thought out. There's it pertains to depending, if you're in the hospital or you're in the clinic. It's so helpful. But I'll tell you, I was thinking as you're talking here about a story when I was, early in my career, and you have to ask, right? And so I like to tell new students and new grads, ask for your numbers, ask what you're billing and reimbursement. You are legally responsible for that, right? As a PA, if there's are they billing correctly? Is there fraud? All of these things. And I think sometimes PAs are sort of surprised what's submitted and what's not submitted, what is their volume, what codes are being submitted. And I'll tell a quick story, and maybe you have one like this, Sandra, but I remember first being a PA and I was in a surgical specialty. And I asked the billing department and the person at the time, and I said, "Do you have my list for the last year?" And they said, "Oh, here you go." And it was like five charges. And I said, "Well, where's all the patients that I saw and what did you bill for?" And they said, "Oh, you're a PA, we just write those charges off." Now, this is, over 20 years ago. This is back when there was some gaps in knowledge, and this was an organization at the time that wasn't as familiar with PA practice. And but if I hadn't asked, I would have had no idea. And then, that prompted the billing and coding individual to say, "Oh, maybe I need to be educated." And so ask, and you should be getting these reports if you're not. But I don't know if you had any similar story, Sandra, to something like that, maybe early in your career, and tips and tricks to ask for what should I be asking for? A financial report, my RVUs, these are terms we don't necessarily all know.
Yes, that's a great story. I definitely have had stories similar to that, and they've come less over the years. I think businesses, and because hospitals are businesses and medical centers are businesses, they've gotten more savvy. They realize that they really need to make sure that they're getting adequate payment so that they continue to keep the lights on to do surgeries to see patients. But it is still going on sometimes, and you're going to hear terms like RVUs, WRVUs, collections, claims. We don't expect you to be an expert in those terms, but we do have explanations of all of them. But they all come down to what is your productivity? What are the number or volume of services that you're providing? And it doesn't all depend on that. There are very important things like patient satisfaction, outcomes, quality, that are more than productivity. But a lot of practices do look at those numbers. So you want to ask, what are you bringing into the practice? What are the number of patients that you're seeing? There can also be times when there are billing mechanisms where the patient care that you provide is attributed to someone other than yourself, usually to a physician. It's important to know if that's getting calculated in or if that's not being attributed to you. So there's so many things that can affect your numbers. And you want to look at it like data in any other area of information. You need to have accurate data when you're making these assessments. We often get questions from PAs about this. We're happy to share our information. You can always forward that information that you get from us to your employer, to your billing and coding department so that they see that it's coming from a reputable source. So you don't need to be the expert. You just need to be the person that knows enough to ask those questions that are so critical.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about two things, little nuances to billing and reimbursement. And one is the 85% reimbursement rate for PAs. And there's a lot of myths out there about who gets 85, who gets 100 PAs, physicians, NPs. And I can tell you over the course of my career, half of them are wrong, right? And you know, and you will see, and part of your role as a PA is to help, one, inform yourself, but then also to inform others when there's myths out there that certain people get different reimbursement. But the 85 reimbursement is true. And I often hear the 15% left on the table, and you know, I sort of shake my head, and but it, nonetheless, it's still there. So tell me a little bit about why it's important for PAs to understand this reimbursement rate and its implications for practice.
That's such a great question. The 15% differential or the 85% payment is really sort of a misnomer. But first, I'm going to step back and say that this is a Medicare reimbursement policy, first and foremost. And so PAs and NPs and clinical nurse specialists are all paid 85% of what a physician would be paid for the same service. Medicaid commercial payers, they may or may not follow that amount. We know some commercial payers, some Medicaid programs that reimburse PAs the same as physicians. So those programs or those reimbursement companies really can vary. But even at that 85%, you have to think about that your contribution margin, the amount that you're providing to your employer after the cost of employing you, is still much higher than it is for physicians, because you're generally making about 30 to 50% of what a physician is. So that 15% differential is more than made up for in that employment differential cost. Also, that is only for traditional payments. There are many now value-based payment models. We can certainly talk about those, but those are models where you get reimbursed for quality, for outcomes, for patient satisfaction, if you're providing high-quality care while containing costs. And PAs contribute favorably to all of those aspects of care. And so that differential is even more made up for or less of an issue when you get into those value-based payment programs. So I would say never let anyone tell you that you're losing 15% for a practice. That is definitely not the case.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad what we just talked about, because there's so much to unpack in there. Don't ever let anyone tell you you're leaving that 15% on the table. It's nuanced to Medicare, private payers, there's bundled payments, there's fee for service. I mean, there's so much complexity when it comes to billing and reimbursement. But I think really the takeaway that I'm hearing is don't let someone else determine your worth and your you know, contributions to an organization or to the department as it stands. But let's move now. You know, you mentioned value-based payment and fee-for-service. Again, confusing terms, right? So let's talk about that. What does this mean? As we know, there's been a shift, and what does this mean for PAs?
There's been a shift. We're still in that shift. And PAs are going to see both sides of this coin. Fee for service, very simply, is you get a fee paid for the service that you provide. So you're going to get paid more the more services that you provide, regardless of the outcome or quality. payers have found that that's probably not the best way to incentivize practitioners for doing quality work. It also gets in that rat race of having to see more patients in a shorter period of time and can lead to burnout. And so we're shifting to value-based payment, where you either get a payment bonus or perhaps a penalty if you're not providing care that is meeting the patient's needs, that is providing high quality, high outcomes, that maybe is at an inconvenient time or location. If you're ordering unnecessary tests or treatments just to bring in additional revenue that's not necessarily needed for the patient's care or for the management of their condition, that's going to all play out and get weighed into that value or that bonus or penalty. And as I said, I think PAs are so well suited to this. There's tons of evidence that we provide high quality care, high levels of patient satisfaction while containing costs. So that really does contribute to this newer payment model of value.
Yeah. And you mentioned absolutely. And you mentioned earlier from the, we were talking about productivity and that it's not just all about the numbers, right? And what we're here for is the patient care and the patient outcomes. And what this shift to value-based care really is about is patient outcomes, and that we're all responsible regardless of whatever specialty. And that is some of the nuances with the value-based payments, right? Is that it makes all the clinicians responsible for screenings and making sure someone's hemoglobin A1C is on track and their blood pressure and all of these things that affect us and can affect our reimbursement. And so PAs, you know, it isn't just about the numbers, but it is about the quality care that we provide and how you measure that. So, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about is we hear a lot as new, and I think as a new clinician, this is some of the struggles, right? You're just trying to learn how to get in your flow, take care of patients, make sure you're doing all the right things. And then you hear a lot about clinicians documenting all night long and going home and taking their work. And we talked briefly about burnout. So do you have any advice for new PAs about how to proactively set themselves up for success, either for documentation purposes or understanding the reimbursement side so they can both enjoy work and home and not necessarily take all their work home with them?
Yeah, and you really do need that life work balance. I think the first thing is that don't be overwhelmed and don't try to learn everything at once. You're going to find that whatever your practice is, whether it's a certain specialty, a certain setting, there's going to be codes or billing codes that you use more or less frequently. So you'll get a feel for what is needed to bill a different level of service for an inpatient encounter if you're in the hospital or an outpatient encounter if you're in the office. That'll start to come to you. Also, there are so many new resources now for helping with documentation, whether that be audio recording, AI, scribes, as long as it's appropriately used and you're using HIPAA compliant software, there's a lot more that can aid you. Also, a lot of EHR systems, a lot of electronic medical records have software built into them that they will help you to determine the code that you need to bill based on your documentation and the type of service that you're providing. So you'll still be responsible for deciding if that code is appropriate, but it'll intuitively help pick that code for you so that you don't have to come from the beginning and come up with it yourself.
Yeah. And I love that you said that because this is a struggle, right? And everybody, you know, people say, well, I don't think I should bill that code. I feel bad. Or I should, you know, I don't want to overdo it. And it really is not. It's about getting, you know, I work with patients and do this work with patients. So you should get reimbursed for the work that you do with patients. So let's shift a little bit now towards like employment arrangements, right? And so depending on where you work, I could be an employed PA, I could be a contracted PA, maybe I have a salary, maybe I get a bonus, you know, maybe it's based on productivity, maybe not. So, If you're a new PA, what advice would you give to them to be in, ensure that they're compensated fairly for the work and the time that they're putting in?
This is an area where we do see that PAs can sometimes get into problems if they don't ask enough questions at the forefront. You want to know how they're going to measure your productivity if there's a productivity bonus. And so we use those terms before RVU, WRVU, charges, collections. You want to know what they're using as their measure of your productivity. There's pros and cons to all of those. Nothing's perfect. We do have resources at AAPA to help you understand all of those, to know what the benefits and drawbacks are of each of them. You also want to know what type of billing mechanisms might be used at your employment setting. There are things called incident two, split shared billing. I think you mentioned it, Jen, global bundled payments. And those can all misattribute the services that you provide potentially to a physician. So you want to know if that's counted into the bonus or if there's other ways that they're measuring that. And then just being very thorough in reviewing any employment arrangement or contract that you might have. It's always within your right to have an attorney look at that for you. You're the one that needs to be protected. Your employer has attorneys and people who are protecting them. You have the equal right to do that. And again, we have a lot of resources to really help you, especially early in your career.
Yeah, no, that's so important. And I think a lot of people, they don't really, they're like, ah, it'll be fine. And then till it's not fine, right?
You're just so
So
excited to get that first job.
I know, right? We want that job so bad, but you also want to make sure that you're protecting yourself. There's lots of clauses and things that are in there. And frankly, not all of them are necessarily built for PAs. Going off just a little bit, sometimes it'll be just a physician contract with your name slapped on there. And there's a lot of things that don't pertain to you in those contracts. So it's really important to have somebody look at it. And I wanted to ask, a couple more questions, and one really, Sandra, around compliance. And I think this is important because a lot of new graduates, sort of feel they don't necessarily have to have accountability. Oh, this gets coded and I code it, but it goes off to my billing department. The billing department will catch any mistakes. They won't bill the wrong codes. And I don't know what's going out, but my billing department's in charge of it. Can you share a little bit about why you cannot take that approach and that ultimately, as a clinician, no matter what process you have in place to submit claims, it ultimately is your responsibility in the eyes of the payer and of the government. So maybe talk a little bit about that.
Certainly, that is a common, unfortunately, misconception that it's the employer's responsibility or those billers and coders to do that for you. It is your responsibility to make sure that claims are submitted on your behalf properly. All payers have to have you have to have compliance with all payers. But when you enroll in Medicare, when you agree to receive any payment for your services for Medicare patients, you will actually agree to follow all of Medicare's rules and policies that pertain to you, and you will sign that you will not falsely submit any claims for which you are not eligible to receive. Basically means that you have to be in compliance with all federal laws, state laws, institutional policies to legally submit a claim on your behalf. And even though you're not the one physically submitting that claim, if a claim is submitted off of your work product, that is considered sufficient in the eyes of the government for you to be submitting that claim. So we don't want to scare you, but you are ultimately responsible if there are any egregious fraud and abuse violations. And just because your employer might tell you to do something a certain way does not absolve you of the liability or risk. And I like to remind people, we've worked very hard to get our licenses, to get our certification, to get where we are that we can practice. And you don't want to put yourself in a position where you might lose that ability to provide care to patients.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think such good advice, Sandra. And It doesn't need to consume you, but this is hence why we talked earlier, right? Make sure you're getting your reports on what's being submitted on your behalf. What does your coding look like, right? There are spot checkers and people to review how your documentation is. Are you compliant? Should you be documenting more robustly or not, or capturing codes differently? So such important advice. And you know, we're coming to the end here, so I wanted to ask you one last question is, could you share with us maybe one thing that you wish you had known when you first started your career as a PA, at getting started in this space?
Hopefully you'll allow me to share a few. One is to keep records of all of your diplomas, your certificates, your licenses. You're going to need those throughout your career when you're enrolling with various payers. Put them into PDF versions. You can, you know, scan those with your cell phones, keep them in multiple locations so that you have access to those. And then the other big piece of advice is really to be your own advocate. You really need to know what your value, what your contribution is, and you need to be able to articulate that. So that would be my advice.
Well, thank you so much. And that wraps up this episode of Ready, Set, Practice. This conversation has made one thing clear, and that's understanding reimbursement isn't just about getting paid. It's about ensuring PAs are recognized and valued for the care they provide. Dr. De Palma, thank you for sharing your insights and breaking down these complex topics. And for more resources and professional development opportunities, visit Learning Central, where you can claim CME for this episode. And if you found this episode helpful, be sure to subscribe and share it with your fellow PAs. Until next time, keep learning, keep growing, and keep shaping the future of PA practice.